This podcast is part of the Podcast You're Seeing Network. Visit us at www.podcastyourseeing.com.
You know, the local media has an agenda that they're going to serve. I don't know who's in charge of it or what it is, if it's like a headless monster.
Why? This is a question.
Walking backwards.
Walking backwards. Something sacred.
I don't know the names of the creep songs. Those are
running
CDs
in circles.
You just pop in and let play.
Sea of Glass.
The Flight and the Fall.
I love Ozzy. I think he's the true definition of a rock star. I heard a comedian talk about him and Michael J. Fox. You know, the world, something's wrong with the world when Michael J. Fox is all screwed up and Ozzy's fine.
It's Bill, and you're tuned into the Pennsylvania Rock Show, episode number 436 on PARockShow.com, MegaRockRadio.net, RootaRooRadio.com, BuildTheScene.com, radio.com and 107.1 FM St. Louis, Missouri. With me tonight on the phone is Dan Getkin. What's up, Dan?
Hey, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing well. I never know how to answer that. And I think I say the exact same thing every time on the show.
There's power in asking the first question. So I stole it from you and I apologize.
So let's just jump right in on the band name. What is the 12-6 part of it?
So 12-6 is a kind of curveball. So I don't know if you're a baseball fan. But
I used to be on as a kid, not so much now.
Okay, well, they've had curveballs for a while. That's not a new invention. I'm sure you're familiar with the curveball.
Yes, I got hit by a few of them in Little League.
Well, better the curveball than the heater, you know. So if you imagine like a clock face, 12 o'clock at the top, 6 o'clock at the bottom. So 12-6 is a term for a curveball. It just drops straight down. Instead of having like left to right or right to left, 12-6 is just one that goes straight down from 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock. So I'm a big baseball fan. I also think that baseball goes really well with Americana music, like in terms of just themes and design. So it was also a much improved name from our old band name, which was longer and worse. So I feel good about it. I feel really good about it, actually.
So I don't know. Can you hear those messages coming across Facebook on me?
No.
Okay. Hopefully they're not being recorded.
I don't hear them.
Okay. They're going to annoy me. There's another one.
You're very popular, Bill.
It's two musicians that I just hooked up in a chat.
I see.
One of them is a bass player from the band Days New Dawn.
Oh, okay.
And the other one is kind of a solo project. He goes by Gonto, G-O-N-T-O.
Mm.
And I design websites for both of them.
Oh, well, there you go.
The bass player actually owns a company called Endeavor After, which is a t-shirt printing company.
Oh, okay, cool.
So
that comes in handy.
Yeah. So Gonto was looking for shirts, and Robbie makes them, so.
Perfect. A match made in heaven, except
right.
the notification is bothering
yes.
you.
Yes.
Particularly hellish at this moment.
And you see how I threw all that in there, right? So now that people can look them up.
Perfect.
Yeah. In fact, Gonto is one of the songs I'll be playing on tonight's show.
There you go.
New track. And of course, I'm going to blank on the title of it. It is Can't Find You.
Okay.
And I actually have 1, 2, 3, 4 new songs to play tonight.
Big night.
That's
big
right.
show.
That's right.
4:36. Never forget.
You said Americana. And then on your website, I think
says cross-examination.
Yeah, alternative country.
Right. Well, you use the term alt country and people will just ask you to define it. So it's hard, man. It's hard out here in the genre world. You know this.
Oh.
Depending on who you're talking to, what people ask you, oh, what kind of music do you play, is one of the hardest questions to answer succinctly. It's very hard to have a short conversation. Or one that like really goes anywhere besides someone just going, oh, okay. Like that's, they just shut down unless you say, oh, well, I play music like Metallica. Everyone knows what Metallica sounds like.
Yes.
I wouldn't
call
Metallica.
Them alt country though.
No, but it presents a very clear picture. People know exactly what Metallica is and they have a feeling about it. Everyone knows what that is. Besides that, once you go into the subgenres, it can be a little
yeah,
it can be a bit of a non-starter conversationally.
And metal is definitely not the one you want to have the subgenre talk about.
That's true. You're really in the weeds there, and it will never get solved in casual conversation with your coworkers. You know, generally speaking.
No, especially not mine.
Right, mine. Yeah, me neither. So.
Mine probably, never mind. We'll talk about that in the break.
Sounds great.
So recently you released a new album?
Yeah, just last Friday. Fresh.
And what's the title of the album?
It's called Feeling Good About the End Times.
Okay. Now, see, that kind of sounds like a metal album.
It could be. It could be. They certainly know a lot about the apocalypse. They've had a lot to say over the years.
I'm glad you used that word. Here comes my first question.
Bring it.
It segues perfectly into it. Okay, perfect. So there's an apocalypse,
uh-huh.
And only a handful of people survive. And along with that, they get one song from every band that's ever recorded. Which one of your songs do you want to survive and become the song that the rest of humanity knows you by?
Well, it's so funny. When I was in high school, I was like I've been playing and writing songs since I was in high school. And I was like that guy in high school. Like I always had my guitar around and I am embarrassed that is my history. But I had a song that was kind of catchy and it was like sort of known in my high school, not by everybody, but you know, among people, like it was like our literary magazine had a CD and they put that as like track one. So people like there was a greater percentage of people around me that knew my music in that moment than will ever happen again. So that song is what comes to mind. I was just at a wedding recently with some people that graduated probably 5 or 6 or 7 years after me. So people I didn't know, they were younger than me. And when I was by myself at this wedding, you know what that's like. You're really grasping for any conversational straws when they put you at that reject table. And so when I introduced myself, they're like, oh, you have this song. I have that literary magazine CD. And I was just like, that. I actually have that one song that in a certain community of people, I can't escape it. I don't know if I want that to be my one song. And I'm very carefully not telling you what it is or what it's about.
I've noticed.
but I feel like after the apocalypse, if I am at a wedding, like a post-apocalyptic wedding, if we still have weddings, which we may not, we may lose the utility for it. But if we're still having weddings and there's still the reject table of non-family in the back behind the post where you can't see the cake cutting, if I'm at that table with people that I went to high school with, they will remember that song.
All right. So which song would you prefer that stays?
Almost anything else. Although when you put out a new album, you come to hate everything you've done before it because you're tired of it and because you think you're improving. And hopefully all that's true. But I really like a lot of the songs on the new album, and I think that the title track, Feeling Good About the End Times, is one of the more ambitious swings at music for me, at least for my own writing. So I'm really proud of that, and I feel like that shows some transparency and some emotional transparency, you know, that I don't think I have shown before.
So I've been holding off and saying this.
Let it rip.
So you talked about, you know, hating your old stuff because you have the new stuff and you're tired of it. And then as you get older and you're playing, you get to the point where the crowd starts yelling, play Freebird. And
yeah. Right.
And how do you handle that?
When people yell Freebird, try to ignore them. Although I do think that having good stage banter is almost more important than having good songs, because it's so important to like continue to be able to engage with the people that are watching you in between your songs. Like, mm-hmm. I think that especially if you have like friends that come to the show that aren't necessarily like the biggest fans of your music, or they bring people along with them and they're not like really, you know, they spend the night talking through your set. That's really your opportunity to reach people. Like if you just tune in between your songs, you're sort of missing out on you know, you've got this like 15% of your night or 20% of your night where you're just standing there. So I like if people yell "Free Bird," I try to like combat it. I mean, they're heckling you, and there's a way to deal with hecklers. There's not one way to deal with them, but you try to engage, maybe make fun of them. You know, it's really not something that we do in polite society. We don't yell "Free Bird" at bands, and you need to educate people that that's not something that you do. You really don't yell things out generally. Like there's an opportunity to applaud, give all the feedback you need to provide at a show. Yelling out things to make you seem funny is not, you know, you don't need to do that. It's okay. The band is handling it. Just enjoy yourself. And if you need more attention, may I suggest an open mic night?
I was at a show in July, and I knew most of the people performing.
Yeah.
And one of them I see like once a year because he moved to Nashville for a while. And I always ask him to play the Ballad of Hazard or what? No, the Dukes of Hazard song. What is it? The Ballad of... I can't think of the name of it now.
But, just a good old boy. Yes. I think it's just called the theme from Dukes of Hazard.
So he told me no. And I was like, okay. But he's really good at it. So he gets up. Like I was standing in front of him. We were doing exactly what you're saying. I was talking to him in between songs.
Yeah, right.
And he tells me no. And then two songs later, he's like, you know what? I think I'm done with my set list. What do you guys want to hear? So I threw my arms up in the air, and he starts laughing. He's like, okay, I'll let everybody in on it. And he starts playing it.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, like, of course, a personal relationship can trump some of the ironclad rules of going to see music performance. But, yeah, if people yell things out during shows, I'm generally going to try to...
to not.
No one really yells out requests that I can honor. I'm not going to play Wonderwall, you know, that sort of thing. But I will use it as an opportunity for comedy. So if I can make at least my bandmates laugh at the things that I'm yelling at a stranger in the dark, I feel like I've done my job.
See, that sounds like a great title for a song, Yelling at a Stranger in the Dark.
Well, I think you should do it. I encourage you to do it.
I have written a few songs. I just can't get anybody to play them.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know how to play, so.
I see. Well, you've done enough favors for people out there. I'm surprised you can't get some demos at least.
I got my landlord to record it.
That's not what I have in mind, but you know, yeah, you got to use what you got.
So every once in a while, I'll play it, and then he'll hear and yell at me.
There you go. That sounds good.
Yeah,
that sounds great.
I kind of wrote like stuff that you would think like. I mean, one is it's called Sinner. And he has like a he was in choir and jazz band and that kind of stuff. So So I wrote like dark heavy rock kind of metalish lyrics, and he sings it like pop. So
that sounds like quite a mixture.
He has a great voice. He does, but just doesn't go along with what I had written.
Not what you had in mind. Yeah, I got you. I got you.
So when I played it, it's about being funny more than
and sure.
But that and I sang backups, and I can't sing, which makes it even funnier.
But you have it though. It's
That's
done.
Right.
You have it as the keepsake now.
So before we get too far into this conversation, why don't you tell me about the rest of the members of the band and what they play and what their part is?
Sure. So we have Bill Brandt on electric guitar, and we sort of like share lead duties depending on the song. So he's the other guitarist, not the lead, not the second guitarist, just the other guitarist. And then Jake Troxel plays keys, so a fantastic organ and Rhodes and piano. And we have Jonah Petrelli that plays bass, and he's definitely in the conversation as one of the top five talented members of the band. He's very good. and Ed and Sparks plays drums, also in conversation for top five members of the band. There's only five members in the band, by the way. but he's certainly on that list. He's definitely on that list. But so when I started this band and started this project, I had in my mind the, like, you know, like, these songs are, like, pretty, like, this Americana music is not, it's not Dream Theater. Like, I don't know that, how much of, like, serious players I'm going to need to make this sound good. And then I started to play with really serious players, and it would be difficult to go back. They just make it sound so good. So I really do feel like I have a band of heavy hitters, and that really elevates the songs. So when they can't make shows, or if, you know, occasionally you have to replace members of the band, it's hard because my standards have been raised so high, but they do a great job.
So I'm on your website, and I clicked where it said photo with eight notes. And I'm not sure what I'm looking at.
I don't know what you're looking at either, to be honest with you.
And then where it said photo with eight notes on the new page, it says photo with 10 notes.
Boy, you've reached the level of my website that apparently I have not cleaned out. I really don't know what you're doing.
Well, let's see. It says, following up on 2017's warmly received S-T,
oh, yeah,
we ring you feeling good about the end times.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So it looks like it's...
you might be looking almost at the album cover.
Well, yeah.
Right.
But
so it's the website is designed on Tumblr. Sort of like on its way out social media platform. Yes. But so the notes, I see what you said. All right. It's all making sense to me now. I thought you were talking about eighth notes.
Well, right. That's why I clicked on it. I was like, what's this?
The eight notes are just like the response.
The comments, yeah.
You know, people liking, and that's about it, really. But so, yeah. All right, good. So you haven't reached the level of my website that I have been inattentive to, because there's really not much to it. But yeah, it's just the platform.
And since we're here, why don't you go ahead and mention the website address?
Yeah, it's dangetkin.com, dangetkin.com.
Yeah, now we got that out of the way.
Exactly. Yeah, there's not a ton of content on there except the most important stuff, which is links to the music, so you can find it there.
Let me hit you with another question.
Please.
I'm going to start calling this one the Diesel Beast question, because they've answered it the best so far.
Okay,
They're a metal band out of Denton, Texas.
Oh, all right, Denton.
But the question is, if you could play at any venue with any band, alive or dead.
Okay.
What band would you choose, and where would you play with them?
Okay. What did they say? It's not much chance that I'm going to say the same thing, but what did they say? You're not going to tell me?
No, I'll tell you, but you're definitely not going to say the same thing. It is, they want to play at Stonehenge with Dio. See?
Uh-huh.
Now you understand why it's their question.
it occurred to me, but it was not, you know, it's not not the number one thing I'd like to do. Any venue with anybody living or dead, I don't know. Maybe like, all right, I would like to play at a campfire with Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. Gotta have Young.
I like that answer.
So Farm Aid was in Pittsburgh recently, but before that, it was in Pittsburgh like 2002, I think. And so Neil Young is a big part of Farm Aid, mm-hmm. And so I was standing and on the lawn at whatever they're calling
Star Lake
Amphitheater now, whatever new bank.
I'm not the only one that doesn't remember.
I haven't been there in a while, but so I was standing on the lawn there, and Neil Young was playing with Crazy Horse, and there were like people around me that were shouting things at him, and of course he would not hear. another reason why you shouldn't heckle at a show, and especially a big show, is that they will never hear you. You're just ruining it for everyone else.
Right.
So he was playing with Crazy Horse, and people were yelling out that you know, Neil Young, like, you ruined Crosby, Stills, Nash. Which is, it's just a horrible position, just an ice cold take on Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. But I think that would be a good group around a campfire. Just, it would sound perfect. That's what I'd like to do. It's no Stonehenge with Dio, but it's my Stonehenge with Dio. That's my version of that.
Well, and it makes me wonder now, what do people yell to Lynyrd Skynyrd when they wanted to heckle them?
I don't know. I don't know any of the names of the members of this version of Lynyrd Skynyrd. That's what.
Well, there's a Van Zant.
It's true. The bloodline does go forward, but they're on their farewell tour, aren't they?
I believe
this
so.
This particular version of Lynyrd Skynyrd is on its way out. Hard to criticize, of course, since the tragedy, but it's a weird for them to take a bow, and they're not even the real ones.
Yeah.
But I wish them the best. I hope they, when they hear this, I don't want them to think that I'm not a fan.
Well, and that brings up another band that's supposedly on their farewell tour, that Kiss. And, you know,
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, and they're 50-50, you know, they're Paul and Gene and the other guys.
Right. Man, everyone's on a farewell tour right now. I'm like, when you said that, I was like, all right, well, is it Paul Simon or is it Elton John?
Elton John was just in Pittsburgh.
That's right. Yeah. I didn't go, but I saw the pictures.
Me either. I never really got into Elton John.
Me neither. I was a big Billy Joel fan. So that, like, when they were doing that face-to-face tour, I would hear nothing of it. I'm not going to see half of a Billy Joel show so half of it could be Elton John, or so that Elton can trade verses on Billy Joel songs. Get the heck out of here. That's awful. It's like seeing your girlfriend make out with Elton John.
Yeah, I don't think that would happen.
No, but yeah, Billy Joel all the way.
So since we're talking about major concerts here for a moment,
yeah,
What's the best concert you've been to, and what's the worst one you've been to?
So the best concert that I've been to, I saw Ryan Adams and the Cardinals play at Massey Hall in Toronto. This is 2007. And Massey Hall is like this beautiful seated venue with like three tiers of seats. Like, you know, the most beautiful natural reverb in the room, and so it just sounded perfect. And that was like my like ideal lineup of that band. They went through lots of different changes, so it was just like a really, really great show. I have the tape of that show, and I listen to it all the time. It's just like a really special memory, but also just a bulletproof set list, and they played it beautifully, and it was great. So that's my favorite show of all time. And then my least favorite show. I mean, I've been to lots of stuff that I don't like, but you know, you just sort of, try to let the bad ones go. Gosh, it's hard to come up with. You know what? I'm not going to be able to come up with the name of it. I went to visit a friend in Washington, D.C., and he was like, one of the nights you're here, one of my favorite musicians is going to be playing at the 930 Club. The 930 Club is also a great place to see a show in D.C., or anywhere for that matter. And so he was like, so I already have tickets to the show, but you'll be in town. You know, we'll get you tickets, and you can come with us. I'm like, okay, you know, already off the bat, like, I'm a little picky with music. I think most discerning ears are like, would be a little hesitant to just like go along with someone that they've never heard of. It's not as if like I hadn't like developed an appreciation for this person. Like, I just went in cold, basically. And so it was a sold out show. There's two nights of sold out shows for this guy who I, and even in this moment, I am failing to come up with his name. But he had come to Notoriety because he had opened for Taylor Swift for a few nights on one of her tours. So like he had the Taylor Swift juice behind his tour. And so it was sold out and we went, and I just hated it, Bill. Like I wouldn't even be able to tell you specifically like when the night turned sour for me, but it was just like none of the words like made any sense to me. And I was just like, is this like the, I don't know. You don't want to judge anyone or anything on one night or on one experience because you know, maybe I had a bad taco or something before I got there. And that was really the reason I was so ornery about it. But it just felt like, you know, everything was set up for success there. Like the 9:30 club was great. Had a great, you know, balcony front row, which is the best for me to see a show is to be in that balcony first row. Nothing's between you and that music. And I was just like surrounded by people that were really into it. They were really having an emotional experience with this music. And I was just like not able to access it. And that's really frustrating. Like you're really like, you know, every word to these songs, you like, it's clear, like they are so meaningful to you. I have no idea what this guy is singing about. It's like, so like vapid and like, he went out to like write songs that sounded like love songs, but they, like, you know, it was like, you know, I am, you know, I'm the fire and the flood. And it was like, I don't know what that means. Like you have to define your metaphors better for me. I'm not getting this. So anyway,
did you yell play free word?
I did not. I still have principles, Bill. I will never, even when I'm not enjoying myself, will I ever yell out free bird at anything but the Skinnerd farewell tour.
Here, I'm going to tell you really quick about my least favorite show.
Please.
And I bet it surprises you.
I'm excited about it now.
Okay, so I went to Kiss Aerosmith. And
you on the mouth or?
What's that?
You went to Kiss Aerosmith on the mouth?
No.
Go ahead.
All right, so I said it in that order because Aerosmith was the headliner that night. They were rotating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it was the year that Aerosmith released their Honkin' on Bobo Blues album.
Okay.
And so Kiss played first, mm-hmm. know, with their fire breathing and flaming
right.
flaming swords and
the whole Kiss thing.
Yeah.
They let it all hang out.
Right, right. And then Aerosmith comes out and they have a set that looks like Bourbon Street. And they sat on stools and played.
Oh, that's the worst.
And I was like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
And then they only played like 45 minutes as the headliner.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. That's
and Joe Perry,
going to piss off some people.
Yeah, and Joe Perry sang most of the songs. So I think maybe Steven Tyler was sick that night.
Oh, well. But
I walked out of there in such a bad mood.
Right.
You know, I went there and you know, I was expecting, you know, America's rock and roll band, and I got Bourbon Street.
That's weird. That's such a weird thing to do. I you know, I have some principles about music, and also, like, another one of them would be, like, if you're going to sit down, be careful. Be careful with sitting down on stage because it just projects the worst energy. Like, you know, I get it if you're like Dave Grohl and your leg is broken, you know, you can't stand up, whatever. But like, if you have the power to stand, people pay good money to see you.
Yeah.
You should probably not sit. You know, if you play the piano, the best piano players are not going to sit for the whole set. They're going to get up on their feet. You know, the Ben Folds, Billy Joels of the world, they'll sit a little bit, but they'll also, they know that they are obligated to get on their feet. So sitting on stools, that's the wrong energy for me.
And then my second least favorite, which didn't stop me from going to see them again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Motley Crue on their Carnival of Sins tour. Uh-huh. The music was great. It was everything else that was going on that I couldn't handle.
They were sitting on stools. I know what you mean.
No, no. There were There were midgets coming out from under women's hoop skirts.
And, holy cow.
And there were videos of people's heads exploding, and it was just different.
What year was this?
Oh, it was, what year was Katrina? 2005?
Holy cow. All right. This is later than I thought it would have been.
And it, the reason I remember is Katrina because it poured that day. It was the week that Katrina hit.
Oh, and, I see.
And I went with my brother, and we stood there, and this stuff was, I mean, it was, there were
Cirque du Soleil?
I can't believe I can't get that out of my mouth. Yes, that.
Uh-huh. Right.
The women hanging from silk scarves above the stage while they
were, okay,
while the midgets were coming across, and it was just, it was weird.
That's, you know, that, you know, I talk about sitting on stools being not, you know, not enough energy for a show. There's a line you can cross the other direction. Yes. Too, where it's like, man, you know, if you didn't hire all those people, you could have kept that money. Like, you're aware that, like, the money you don't spend, you get to keep. How essential to this production was all of that? Like, pick maybe one of those things. That's what I see. I'm just looking at the bottom line. Like, is it so good that you wouldn't have liked to have all that money?
Now, granted, they were the only band there. There were no openers, nobody after them. It was just them.
An evening with Motley Crue.
And like I said, I loved the music. I saw them again afterwards. I have not seen Aerosmith again, which kills me because I love Aerosmith, but I just can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, it was a bad show.
They disappointed you once, and that's on them. They made every wrong decision with that. But hey, Kiss fan for life, though.
Yes.
Rocked it as the opener.
I saw Motley Crue with Kiss the second time I saw Motley Crue.
Well, talk about, you can't have too much of a good thing, I guess.
So, let's get back to you.
Okay, that sounds good.
I told you this was going to go all over the place.
That's fine. I'm learning a lot. I'm learning a lot about so many things.
So, let's see here. How about, can you pinpoint the exact moment in time where you decided you were going to be in a band?
Not really. I think that I was definitely in a shell in high school. Like, I was pretty shy, and I hadn't really come out into the world yet. And then I started to play the guitar, and like, suddenly I was like getting a little bit of attention that wasn't negative. Like, generally in high school, as a shy person, you just perceived attention as a negative thing. Like, you don't want anyone to talk to you. You don't want to be noticed. And then I played a little guitar. And in fact, I have an older brother who played guitar and played in a band in high school. And I looked up to him quite a bit. And so being able to see how cool that was and how people liked that, I kind of thought, I will also do that. That seems like a good thing to do. And so I was, able to be halfway decent at it. And so it just never really stopped from there. And that was like a big thing for me. I was like, oh, people enjoy having me around and doing a thing. And like, oh, it turns out like I have a sense of humor that people also like. And so that was the last year, maybe 2 years of high school were a big change for me because I realized that could be a thing that I could hide behind. Yeah, I could hold that guitar and hide behind it, and some people would be excited that I was there. So it's really just about having attention and starting off a long career of being an attention whore from very modest roots.
Why don't you tell me about the track we're going to play, and we'll take a break at the Ivy Inn.
Sure.
It's kind of like, I don't know, how old are you?
I am 32.
Okay. Do you remember MTV Storytellers?
Of course.
Okay. So that's kind of what I'm going for here.
Right.
But a shortened version.
Short, not 27 minutes. Got
right,
it.
Right.
So there may or may not be a bar near where I live called the Ivy Inn. any resemblance to any real place is purely coincidental and unintentional. It's just a good name for a bar. And so the song tells a story of a bar fight that I've never had because I would never get in a fight. There is a thing that I have not invented this thing. John Mulaney has a stand-up bit about this, and this is well-traveled bar antics. But the song talks about being in a bar with people you don't like, and you try to clear them out by playing a song on the jukebox and playing it over and over and over again to annoy them and hopefully get them to leave. And this is – so I talk about using a Neil Diamond song in the song – but I don't actually do that. The song that I usually use when I'm trying to clear people out of a bar is Ba with the Ba by Kid Rock.
See, I like that song, though.
There's nothing wrong with the song. The beautiful part about that song is that it has a fade up at the beginning. So, like, Ba with the Ba ends, like the song ends, and people are like, okay, that song's over. And then, like, what is that? What? Here it comes again. Like, it fades up. It doesn't like have a big, so it just like drives people crazy, because after like the second and third and fourth play, people are like, gosh, I hope it's not Ba with the Ba again. Wait, is that Ba with the Ba? Oh my god, it's Ba with the Ba again. So I've had them unplug the jukebox because I threw 10 Ba with the Ba's in there. I don't encourage – it's very passive-aggressive. I don't encourage people to do that. But sometimes people are just being jerks at bars and being loud, and you don't have to do that. You can just have a good time and not bother everyone around you.
Okay. So with that, we're gonna play Dan Getkin and the 12-6, and the song is At the Ivy Inn off of their new release, Feeling Good About – sorry.
It's about – a lot of words.
Feeling good about the end of times.
Yeah.
And we're going to follow that up with a new track from John Vento off of his release, Love, Lust, and Other Wreckage. And that song is called Baby Blues. This is the Pennsylvania Rock Show, episode number 436.
Nobody smiled when I walked in. Sitting at the bar at the Ivy Inn. You gotta pay your tab in cash. Each night I walk through the door to the past. Used to drive by here on a way off from church. Now I drive in when I get the urge. Take a $10 bill and drink my fill. TV. Now there's five of these dudes standing next to me. Are they playing darts and just swinging their arms and poking holes in the drywall? You want to clear out the bar, what do you do? It's a bona fide tip, it's tried and true. Just bebbing me, but they were sniffing for a fight.
pretend as I drove around. Thought of all the hell I put you through. We were in the sun and it sank below, waiting on the beach for a fireworks show. Glitter in the sky, reflected from your eyes. Baby blues, they were. I didn't see the light. Baby blues, so damn bad tonight without you. Up cold, I'm on my own in a twilight zone. Thought of all the hurt I put on you. We were in a cloud when the day would dawn, coming to the end of a marathon. Gentle daybreak chimes, your morning would shine. Baby blues, they were. I didn't see the light. Baby blues, got 'em. So damn bad tonight. From the mud there came my lotus. Too late for you to notice. Wrong to play the part with the coward's heart. Thought of all the truth in your tattoo. We were drunk on love when you got that rose, hidden safe and sound underneath your clothes. It's a mystery, why I set you free. Baby blues, they were. I didn't see the light. Baby blues, so damn bad tonight without you. Without you. Without you.
Hey, it's Bill. You're tuned into the Pennsylvania Rock Show, episode number 436. And if you're just tuning in now, maybe you're going to sleep. I don't know. we are talking to Dan from Dan Getkin and 12-6. And we talked about all kinds of odd things and some band-related things. And you're just going to have to go back and listen if you missed it. Right, Dan?
Go back. Listen to it. We cover some wild territory.
So... when you listen to people when bands get interviewed, they always ask that, well, who influenced you?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm not going to ask it that way.
Okay, great. You're going to ask who definitely did not influence me?
No. I would like you to tell me about your record collection.
Okay. I actually just got a turntable last year for the first time. So of course, I could have fibbed and told you about my digital collection, but instead, I'll tell you about my fledgling vinyl collection. I'm trying to get all the Jackson Brown. I don't know if you're a big Jackson Brown guy.
I'm not.
It's okay. I hope you won't hold it against me that I am. He just turned 70 this week. Happy birthday, Jackson Brown. But I'm working on that. I'm trying to get all that. Trying to get all the Dire Straits.
Okay.
I'm a big Dire Straits fan. I mean, you buy a Stratocaster and it sits in your studio, and you just know it'll never sound as good as Mark Knopfler playing his Stratocaster. It's his playing is impossible to replicate. So I like Jackson Browne for his songwriting. I also feel like he was plagued with sort of all of the worst production decisions of each era that he went through. So like, he's got these great songs. They're fantastically well written, and the lyrics and the melodies are perfect. But then it's got like all the synth on top of it, or the piano sounds horrible. Like, just because like in the 70s they were doing that and they shouldn't have. And so like, if you get a chance to see Jackson Browne live, that's where you're going to hear how great it really is. But I see through all the nonsense, and I think the records sound great. So, the biggest cornerstones of my collection so far are Jackson Browne and Dire Straits at the moment. But, you know, I've punctuated it with a little bit of got some Paul Simon in there. I've been holding on to a copy of an album by the New Riders of the Purple Sage. Are you familiar with them?
I'm not.
So they're like, for a period, Jerry Garcia was in New Riders of the Purple Sage. Now, this is after Jerry Garcia left, so probably not the era that people treasure. But I found this record when I was working in college radio. I went to Allegheny College, and there was a radio station there that I worked with, and they had an archive of CDs, but then there was also like a few records, and this record was too weird looking to just let sit there, so I took it. And it's got some weird songs on it, but I really like it. And it's got one of those classically insane 80s album covers. Everyone's in sort of like Western / medieval clothing.
Okay.
It's a hybrid that nobody should try, because it doesn't work, but also because it was done once to confirm that it does not work. But it's good. It's good. So
What song would you be embarrassed to tell people you like?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I mean, I'm not really ashamed of the guilty pleasures. I mean, there's definitely some stuff that I like that might be a little off-brand. I like... what song do I like? This one's a hard one. Because nothing is jumping out at me. Something I like that I would be embarrassed to tell people. I think, what I'll tell you is that my love for Billy Joel goes so deep that it would also include all of the 80s Billy Joel that is not like really part of the canon. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. And so like, sure, like The Stranger, fantastic album, you know, Piano Man, these are the classics. We've covered them well, but like, stuff off of The Bridge, like Running on Ice, I just felt at this point it's more nostalgia than like true love for the music. But at that moment in my life, like when I was in junior high and I was collecting every CD that I could get that was Billy Joel, I didn't realize how strange and insane some of these Billy Joel songs got, where, you know, he just decided, oh, I'm going to play the guitar now. Like, why, Billy? Why did you think that anybody would want that? to have you just play like bar chords? Like, your hands have like this magic power, and you're going to play like E, B, A on a guitar? Don't hide the magic. So if I get a chance, and I'll get someone who actually like will sit there and listen with me with 80s Joel, they may live to regret it, because I don't stop until I get to the end. So that's a true guilty pleasure. It comes from a place of love, but yeah, it ain't all great.
What is something that fans of your band would be surprised to know about you, besides the 80s Billy Joel stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm kind of a poser when it comes to the country thing. Like, I don't have like blue collar roots, and I came to that love of that genre in college. So like pretty late. It feels like I came to it late. I mean, college was so long ago, you know, over a decade ago at this point. But you know, I certainly have friends that like somehow were cool through their whole life. And there's even like bands in Pittsburgh, like I don't know if you know Zach Kime or the Knox Boys in Pittsburgh, where it's just like,
I have heard of the Knox Boys.
They are so good and they're so young. And when I think about what I was doing musically at their age, just makes me upset that they're doing good thing, like stuff that will stand up over time. Like it's hard for me to imagine them looking back and being like, oh, what an embarrassment. Just doing good stuff now.
Have you seen Safety Last?
No.
All right, so they're like 15. Ugh. And I saw them this past weekend at Rocktoberfest with Rock for Life show.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say they need to work on their stage presence a little bit.
Sure.
But they're 15.
Right. Right.
They were playing Hot for Teacher and the covers they played, they were definitely not alive for.
Yeah.
But well, they played them so well. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure that I threw that out there tonight in the show. They impressed me. And you got a little bit of their but I'll give you an example of what I mean.
Mm.
So there's a light box. They call it the Ego Riser, the light company.
Okay.
And the guitarist can go up there and solo, or the singer can go up there and do his thing.
Okay.
And the lights shine up from under them.
Oh, okay.
So their guitarist goes over and he plays the solo and the song ends and he runs back over to his mic and he goes, "Dude, I was on the box." And he was so proud.
That's cool.
And then the other thing they said that really just, it made me laugh was the one guitarist's dad was playing bass for the night because their bass player was at his JV hockey game.
It's a busy time. It's a busy time for those kids.
But they really were. They were excellent. So if you get a chance to go see Safety Last, you should do that.
But that's what I'm talking about. Like, to like have roots that are that cool that early is not something that I also enjoy. Like when I was in high school, I was listening to Dave Matthews Band, and like I'm not gonna make your radio show a Dave Matthews hatred show, but it doesn't really influence anything I'm doing now. And it's not, what would be embarrassing is if you were like, put a gun to my head and you were like, listen, if you don't play 10 Dave Matthews songs on the guitar, I'll shoot you. I would pass that test with aplomb. Like, I wish I could replace all of the muscle memory and the knowledge of Dave Matthews songs and actually like replace it with useful knowledge to be like, remember the thing that my wife told me to do, or remember how to do my taxes.
That remembering the thing the wife wants you to do is very important.
And being
almost 10 years older than you, and I'm giving you that advice.
Sure. Yeah, I know. If I could be better at that, and I would not be able to remember how to play two-step, I would be happy to make that trade. But my brain will not do it. I will just always remember how to play 20 Dave Matthews songs because that's just what I was doing. And that's the embarrassing part. I don't have cool music roots. It took me a while to like get into college radio and realize that there's a whole world of music out there that I didn't even know existed. So, that's when it finally changed and I got exposed to some really, really, really influential stuff.
Well, here, I'm going to ask you two more questions.
Okay.
And one of them is my country question.
Okay.
It is, if I was to play your song backwards, what would I hear? Do you know the joke?
I don't know the joke.
So the joke goes, what happens when you play a country song backwards?
Oh, he gets out of prison and
right.
He gets his truck back and his dog survives or something.
See?
Sorry, I didn't pick up on it early enough.
Yeah, ask a metal band that, and they're always like, hopefully not Satan.
But, yeah.
Yeah, so what happens if we play one of your songs backwards?
Okay, so if you play my songs backwards, I, tells the story of me making friends at the bar, or tells the story of
the bar that may or may not be by your house.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? It's so unclear. Yeah, so you play that song backwards, and it's a story of brotherhood and camaraderie at the bar. I mean, a lot of my songs are just sort of rooted in asking questions about faith. Like, I went to seminary, and even though I graduated, didn't really pursue that any further, like, brought up a lot of questions. So a lot of the songs would be like me feeling really great about going to church again. And so that's like the biggest theme. I mean, the album artwork is a really dark picture of a church, and of course, feeling good about the end times calls upon some religious imagery. So, you know, that there's something in there about that. And, the songs are not, it's not Christian worship music. It's not contemporary Christian music. So got some heartbreak in there, on those themes. So if you play it backwards, feel great about going to church.
Where can people get a copy of that new album?
So let's rank these in terms of what I would prefer people do. I would love for people to come to a show. It'd be my favorite way, and to put a physical copy in somebody's hand, and for them to take it back to whatever CD player they have remaining in their life, whether it be their car.
You're really good at bringing up more questions. Why don't you tell us where they can see you and then continue your list?
We had a big album release party last Friday night, and that was the only thing on the calendar. So at this moment, I can't tell you the next time that we'll be playing out. But if you keep your eye on our website, or if you like us on Facebook, we will definitely stay in touch, and I'm sure we'll be back out and about in the city soon. But that would be the best way. I would much rather see people in person. Otherwise, like, if you want to get it on Bandcamp. Bandcamp is really good to us. But besides that, buy it on Apple Music. That's okay. I put that number three in terms of preference. And then, of course, it's on all the streaming services. If I really didn't want people to listen to it on Spotify, I don't have to put it on Spotify. But
you didn't watch the news today, did you?
I did not listen to the news today. What's up?
So President Trump signed a law that has to do with streaming music and who's getting paid and how much they're being paid.
Okay.
And basically, the streaming companies need to redo how they do things according to this law.
All right.
So,
well, we'll see. I mean, I'm sure that that's true and that there's going to be a change, but I think that in the grand scheme of things, how much do I really expect Spotify to play me for people listening to my music, you know, once on a lark? I don't know. But I can tell you that if you buy it on Bandcamp, I get a lot more money from that, which will help me pay for the CDs that I've already paid for, which will help me put my son through welding school someday. So help me get him into a good trade.
Welding
the last jobs. Hey, man, of course, when the robots take over, we're still going to need welders.
That's a very valid point.
So we're not going to so much need, the arts and humanities, but we will need welders. So,
okay. So, did we hit all the places that you want to mention?
we hit a lot of places. I had no idea we were going, but I'm really proud of the album. It's really good. And there's lots of guest features on the album from people that are, they're in good bands in Pittsburgh. So if you know bands like the Recluse or the Common Heart, Molly Alphabet, we got some huge lifts from people, and people doing us favors that we didn't deserve. So even if you don't like me, you know, like my band, there's a lot of other stuff on there for you to listen to. And that's what makes me probably the most proud, is that we not only get to showcase the songs that I've written, the performances of my band, but also get to show, there's a deep bench in Pittsburgh right now, and we're so privileged to get to call on them every now and again.
So I feel like there was one name missing out of there that's usually said when those bands are mentioned.
Okay.
Paul Luke.
Paul Luke, absolutely. He's not featured on my album, but he's having a good year, and I've seen him a couple times recently.
He did my show... Wow, probably in like 2004, 2005.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when he plays with his band in Pittsburgh, Nathan Zub from Recluse plays with him and he's on my album. And then Reed Connolly, who plays pedal steel with Paul and also with the Beagle Brothers and also with lots of other people in Pittsburgh. But Reed Connolly plays pedal steel on my album too. So, okay. So it's a little bit of a small world out there, but, those are all good. There's the same good people that play with Paul Luke. I get to play with them every now and again too. So boy, Paul's having a great year and what a great album that was that just came out.
Okay, so this has been episode number 436 of the Pennsylvania Rock Show. Make sure you go to Dan Getkin, that's DanGetkin.com, to find out when I just want to say the 12-6, but Dan Getkin and the 12-6 are playing next.
Yeah.
And make sure you go and pick up a copy of their album while you're there.
Yeah, in person. Let's do it.
That's right. And you can check us out next week. I would love to tell you who's going to be on the show, but I honestly don't know right now.
Let it be a surprise.
Maybe I'll give Paul Luke a message and see if he
wants to call him up. It's been a long time. He's got to have a lot. His car died. He's got some stories to tell you. Give him a call. Don't tell him I sent you because he doesn't know who I am, but he's got a friend in me.
The future never tells. I can't find you.